Welcome, Pinto and Sean Bean patrons. Welcome to Extra Beans.
Welcome to Extra Beans.
Hello.
Hi.
For those who can handle a few more beans than the regular.
Welcome to the most elite club on earth. Where the only rule is there aren't any rules except for the rules. And that your imagination is the only limit to what can be... It's just a place where we just put in extra content, isn't it, actually?
How does it feel to be the other side of the velvet rope?
That's right. You've smashed through the glass banister.
And fallen down the stairwell.
And you're in the velour-lined basement privilege.
Wonderful.
It's a different class of listener, I think.
Yeah.
You know, when I feel like we're recording these bits, you know, obviously when you do a podcast, you kind of imagine who you're talking to. That's the rule of radio, isn't it? You're meant to imagine the person you're talking to.
And you imagine they're sitting on the toilet.
And you imagine they're naked on the toilet. That's right.
Yeah.
Experiencing deep gastric trouble.
That's right. And that gives you the natural feeling of the status and authority, doesn't it, to be able to speak?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because they chose the dodgy gel phrasey, even though you warned them about it.
Yeah.
And,
So it's their fault.
You had the biryani, which you knew would be a safe option. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's how I think about the normal non-paying listenership. With this tier of listener, they're on the toilet, sure.
But they're fully clothed.
Yeah.
Shitting through their trousers.
Shitting into their trousers, that's right.
That's right.
And some of them are able to use a little sort of blade to create a little aperture to vent.
Or probably get someone else to do that for them, because that's the kind of people we're dealing with. Yeah.
That's right.
And the reason they've got the gastric trouble is because they've eaten the world's tallest pile of profiteroles. That's what I imagine.
So they're on a plate of truffles.
That's right.
Also snapping.
So last week I went to Lidl and I bought some ham, which looked promising.
Yeah.
And it was all in Italian. That's why I thought it was promising. Mm-hmm. Like the writing is all in Italian.
Because sometimes a lot of people, Ben, will choose to buy hams which already look like they've made it, you know, that this is already a good ham. Whereas you have the longer game in mind, don't you? You like to choose a ham which just feels like
it's got promise.
Just keep an eye on this ham because I think, I mean, at the moment it doesn't look edible, but it's got potential.
You got potential, kid. You're going to be a great ham one day. So anyway, this ham, it was in Italian.
Was the ham in Italian?
Yeah, all in Italian.
The whole ham was in Italian.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
So I was like, well, that's good,
right? I don't have any subtitles. I don't want to play ham sandwich. Yeah. But go on.
It's not dubbed. Open the packet. Absolutely hummed of something absolutely disgusting. I was like, what the fuck is this? Is this gone off? So I was looking at the packet and I was like, what's con tartufo mean? Whatever. And it meant with truffles.
Oh.
And there were little bits of truffle embedded in the ham.
Yeah.
And it turns out that truffles are absolutely rank.
They're quite stinky.
Fuck me, that was horrible.
Yeah, there's too many of them about these days, I think, truffles are everywhere.
Maybe you feel genuinely ill.
Yeah, it's an intense, pungent, really, really extreme mushroomy sort of experience, isn't it?
It was awful.
So, yeah, that's a shame.
But I'm sure the listeners here would be able to handle that, because they're those countries.
Exactly.
They'd have known that. They'd have known how to translate the Italian ham packet in the first place. You know, they've been translating Italian ham packets for years, these guys. So they wouldn't be caught by surprise, and they would have enjoyed the truffles, you know, because they're sophisticated.
That's right. Their palates are attuned.
Yeah.
And I suppose we, in a way, and this content is the equivalent, isn't it, of those little flecks of truffle that didn't actually make it into the main ham, but which carry a pungent conversational kick. Yeah.
Speaking of which, here's some extra miscellaneous guff for your enjoyment.
Okay.
One.
Two.
Three.
I've said three,
four.
Haven't I? Sorry.
Five.
Six. Perfect team. Perfect.
Henry momentarily took on like the persona of like a New York cop.
I said three, didn't I? I'm saying three here.
So three.
Get out of my way. I've got a pizza here. You're jaywalking. Hey, I'm trying to walk out. I'm trying to take my pizza for a walk here. You're jaywalking. You had a steam coming out of the pavement. That's how it works here.
It's a steaming pavement city. No one knows why.
Is that true about the steaming pavements?
Yeah, I've seen them.
Yeah, I think I've been steamed.
Have you been steamed?
I was delighted when I saw it happen.
Yeah. And I towed the line. I didn't ask why. They don't want you to ask why.
No, they don't want you to ask why.
I enjoyed being freshly steamed.
But I tell you what, if you're late for a meeting and you haven't had time to iron your gear.
Yeah, it's great.
Get a trouser steaming on the way.
That's why they look so good downtown. That's why everyone looks so fresh and pressed.
Maybe it's a Great Depression era sort of thing. Do you think it's because they were such a dynamic city?
Have they nationalised ironing?
They might have nationalised ironing. I don't know. Or maybe it was aiming to be the first 100% round-the-clock fully steamed city and that was, they overinvested in that, and that caused the crash. I don't know. I mean, it's unlikely.
But it draws the crowds, doesn't it?
It really does draw the crowds. But it's so...
That's why you get
it's so cinematic as well, isn't it?
So cinematic. And also, it's great, isn't it, to create the perfect alley, which is what you get in York, isn't it?
Dog-sized rats.
You got your dog-sized rats.
Always an active crime going on.
Yeah, always active. So you've got dog-sized rats.
Floppy pizza slices.
Yeah, floppy pizza slices. Being nibbled on by rat-faced criminals, isn't it? Mm-hmm. So you've got dog-sized rats, rat-faced criminals.
It's always night as well there.
Always night.
Because the buildings are so high. Sun never wakes them.
That's such a good point. You very rarely see it in the daytime.
Yeah. It's always night in the alley, there's just enough light from one of the flickering neon signs.
Mm. Yeah.
Isn't there? To see the rat-faced criminal, to see the steam rising out of the streets.
And to see the man-sized Teenage Mutant Hero Turtle that's approaching.
That's right. / bat-shaped human vigilante man. Who's waiting. In one of his incarnations. So yeah,
And information is dispersed by snippets of newspaper that float on the breeze and land on your chest with a picture the corrupt city official. Yeah.
Always landing and unfurling on the correct headline. It's never just some sports information.
It's not personalised ads.
Yeah, it's never.
It's not about someone selling a fridge.
That at the climax of a film, it diffuses the tension, doesn't it, too much? It's like
you don't want to hear about the fact that some 13-year-old's won a sports scholarship to a local elite academy. You're not interested in that.
That's quite a good deal in that fridge.
Wait a minute.
If it really is still in warranty, then I should move fast.
Or the Sudoku. It never sort of unfurls on the Sudoku.
Half-finished.
Wait a minute. I'll defuse the bomb in, on average for me, about 12 to 14 minutes. Just give me a second, eh? Oh, this one's been sold. This one's been set by Mega... This one's been said by the Riddler. It hasn't, actually. It's just been said by... I don't know who does the Sudokus.
Do they do that in Sudokus? Do they have aliases?
I don't know.
I don't think you can set a Sudoku.
No, because it's random. Is it just random numbers, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's completely arbitrary.
You just roll the dice. But it's a great... It's a mythic space, isn't it? It's an archetypical space. Mm. It's a space where stories are born.
And Kurt Russell dies.
Kurt Russell generally.
When I went to New York, I was quite pleased that it sort of was a bit like that. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
There's enough of it that actually is real, like all the steam coming out of the floor, that you go, oh, it's like this.
Yeah. You'll be in the... A yellow cab will barrel down the alley and try and run you over while you're in the alley. Yeah. That will happen.
Yeah.
Sending sparks out from either side as it.
Whereas Los Angeles is not very much like it appears on films. I don't know if you've had that experience.
I don't know. I haven't really experienced
it. Largely because you'll just be sitting in a traffic jam at all times.
But are people bursting into a musical number in the middle of that jam?
Of course.
Okay,
yeah, of course.
Okay. That's something. Happen.
Which gets a bit annoying, doesn't it? So you end up whacking
Well, that's
radio
why the traffic's moving so slowly, isn't it?
Yeah. So many people are breaking out into different musical numbers.
Fucking Fred Astaire's there. Ginger Rogers.
And that's why that's why the traffic reports in LA is things like, a production of South Pacific has broken out.
It's moved along the A39.
On the A39, so probably.
But it's collided with the guys and dolls coming eastbound.
Yes, that's right. So if you want to avoid those, you will have, but you can go south through the turnpike, but you will have to go through Phantom of the Opera in Dutch.
I don't know why you're imagining LA, but I don't think Phantom of the Opera really has made its mark on that town.
Don't lie to yourself. That's and me nonsense. And Mike and Andrew Webber. Don't lie to all
of us. It's the Universal Musical.
Has it made it outside of the UK?
Phantom of course, Opera? It has. It's huge. Done. Phantom.
No, I assume it's on like a sort of perennial world tour, and also has a permanent station in every major city in the world as well.
I think surely. It does.
And some of the minor cities.
Mm.
Maybe I've got this wrong. It just feels like the kind of thing that only British sort of middle-aged women would like.
Well, I think you're making the mistake that a lot of people have made with Andrew Lloyd Webber, which is putting him in that category, whereas actually he speaks to everyone. And maybe you should get off your high horse and get down to...
Down to the Parisian sewers with the rest of us.
Yeah, exactly. I've never actually seen it. I really want to.
I saw it as a child.
It's on my bucket list.
Is it?
Yeah, it really is, actually.
I'm hoping that's because the bucket list is a very long bucket list. I will admit, if there's only five things on it, and that's one of them, I'll be a bit disappointed.
It's just that, and try Taco Bell.
Yeah. But it's just never the right moment, Ben. It's never the right moment.
I went to Taco Bell. We've got a Taco Bell in Cardiff now. We've got two Taco Bells.
Oh, stop showing off.
Well, that's
your big city living.
That's another American film sort of trope.
Yeah, well, that's it. And I think going there is the time I most feel like I'm having an American experience in Britain, I think, is going to Taco Bell.
Really?
Even though it's run, you know, by South Wales teenagers.
I'm guessing it's really rubbish, is it?
Well, no, because it's like a punchline in American films, isn't it, of being crap.
Oh, is it? Okay, right.
But actually, it's quite nice. I liked it anyway.
Yeah.
But I found it quite exotic.
You bought in fully.
Oh, yeah.
It was a sort of lifestyle choice. It wasn't just a meal.
No, and the fact that the woman behind the counter pronounced quesadilla, do you want a quesadilla, love? didn't take away.
Quesadilla. Yeah.
How many quesadillas do you want, Bert?
You know what that is? I know that feeling of when you go into it. You go into a chain restaurant of some kind, really, really wanting that American or whatever country it's from experience, and it's just a very likable middle-aged Welsh woman with a very, very, very thick Welsh accent.
On roller skates.
That's fusion, isn't it? Isn't that what culinary fusion is?
And do you want Mama's hot chili ranch? Chili sauce with that? I can't do it.
Oh, dear.
Sorry, I can't. That's all right.
That's all right.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to go in, does it? Of course, I wonder if the similar thing's happening over in LA right now. Someone's talking about how... you know, yeah.
Here you go, sir. Here's your bucket of beans.
Wow. Here's your steak and kidney suet pudding. That kind of thing?
Yeah. Hey, and hope you enjoy these plates of white sliced bread, slightly toasted, with chunks of cheese and some margarine. Some of it's under the cheese, and some of it later on the...
Some of it's around the plate, put on the edge, so be careful of your sleeves.
Around the plate. Ooh. Mmm. And that's also got a nice cup of hot mama's water. Cup of hot mama's water.
You want the spicy water or you want the mild water?
We got two kinds of water. We got still tap water and we got really hard limestoney water.
But for $5, you can have the ranch water, which is a kind of mayonnaise-y water.
You'll love that. Oh, yeah.
Struggling to shift it.
Welcome to Scaly Joe's. Our water's got more kinds of scale than anyone else. You got the crispy chunks of lime in the really hard water. You got the soft water. Or the other way around. I can't remember. And... good luck making a lather with this one, or not making a lather. Or washing off the lather with it, or not washing off the lather with it. Enjoy. Soft water. It's a glass of soft water. Or hard water. Yeah?
Mike's left.
I'm not blaming Mike for that.
It looks like he's taking a call on a video screen, like the future.
I'm not blaming Mike for that right now.
So about that?
All right, mate.
No, it was, I think, a delivery.
It wasn't Space Force 19, was it called? They
still, God, it might have been. I might have been commissioned.
Because then you still do some stuff for them, don't you?
Not again. Just off books, though.
Yeah, it's off book stuff, isn't it?
Can you be press ganged into the Space Force?
Well, I volunteers, but yeah, they do mostly get, it's mostly press ganging. Absolutely. If you're between the ages of 11 and 97, then you can be, yeah.
You can be press ganged.
Press ganged, yeah.
Because you, you did a lot of off-world stuff, didn't you? when you were starting out in comedy, you were combining it with stints of off-world.
Well, I was worried about it going wrong, so I thought it'd be better to try it out off-world in case it didn't work.
Because a lot of your first gigs were off-world, weren't they?
They were off-world.
Yeah.
But the trouble is with doing off-world is then the stuff that does work off-world really doesn't actually work when you get back on-world again. So you start.
That's the trouble,
scratch,
isn't it?
So it wasn't.
Yeah, you're actually not preparing. Because, you know, you might be huge in the Gamatron system. Which you're not.
Which let me tell you, I'm not.
Yeah. You're absolutely not. But
you'll have noticed if you look at Mike's list of tour dates, he is not going to the Gamatron system.
He's not going. It's really notable by its absence, isn't it?
The two places he's really struggling, Gamatron system and Cardigan, those are the two places that Mike's comedy cannot.
Yeah.
I just can't find a foothold in those places.
Haven't put the work in, really, without
you
have place.
So the rotating Omniplex cyber arena. that's of course Cardiff's famous venue. You failed to sell out, haven't you?
No, it's a real shame. It can take 15,000 people or up to almost two medium-sized squidiform squazbots.
I heard that you made a bit of a boo-boo, didn't you, when you did your gig in the Gamatron system, which, as you said, hi guys, good to be here in the Megatron system, which of course they hated the Gamatrons and the Megatron system. You'd done so many gigs in a row that you'd forgotten where you were.
Yeah.
And then you pulled out a local newspaper.
I tried to do a bit of local stuff
but of course all their news is fully telepathic, isn't it, in that system anyway, so they already
I simply don't have the bonds to grasp it.
Well, no, and if you put out a newspaper in that kind of atmosphere, it just immediately goes on fire and burns, doesn't it?
That's right, yeah. So,
so they were left with terrible headaches. And, I just had to leave. I had to go. I hid in the nearest interplanetary service station for a few days. let's not forget, of course, that we had an episode some weeks ago about dogs. That felt very important to me. It felt like a landmark episode. But we didn't spill all of our beans in that episode. And here's a bit more doggy chat.
Not going to do a dog pun?
Should do a doggy dog pun, shouldn't I? You might have thought that we'd cut the bollocks off that dog chat. But we did. And here it is now. We didn't throw
them away. We didn't chuck the bollocks into like a pedal bin.
No. Or incinerate them. No, we kept them, preserved them, and here they are.
The pickled bollocks of chat.
I tell you what, unlike a dog that's frothing at the mouth, this chat, if it was a book, would be unputdownable.
and not frothing at the
and not frothing the contents at the mouth. And not frothing at the contents.
Pamela.
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 This is how you summon your hound.
Pamela.
Canada.
Pamela.
Pamela.
The world in your hand.
Pamela.
Henry, I was listening to another podcast recently made by friends of ours, Mike Bubbins, Alice James.
Oh, yeah. Oh, very good. Socially distant sports bar, I assume.
Yeah. Good podcast.
Yeah.
They've been playing adverts for Canada recently.
Have they?
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Like the modern podcast version of Canada.
Oh, and how are they selling it these days, Canada? What market are they going for?
Very similar vibe to those adverts in terms of like the message.
Yeah.
Home of Jordan Peterson.
But I was a bit annoyed we hadn't picked up that campaign, you know? Just because
we've yet to have an entire country get behind or, you know, want to link itself to us, have we?
Oh, here she comes.
Here she comes, just right, a woofing, na na na.
You're going to come and say
it? Doobity, woof.
Oh, wow.
Hey.
Oh,
nice.
Oh, cute as heck.
Come on, Pam.
Pam, she's probably not going to work because she's coming here for a nice...
No, she doesn't do it to order. That's okay. She's not being trained. It's very, very sad.
Oh, right. Cute. She's done. She's found a sock or something, and she's going to go eat a sock.
Is that a sock?
Also, another thing about the film, quickly, is it's very similar to the first one, because in the first one, you've got these humans who are learning the way of the Na'vi, right? So it's a kind of learning or teaching movie or something where a lot of it's just being taught, this is what we do, this is how we hunt, this is what we eat, this is that. And the second film is basically exactly the same, except the Na'vi meet some other aliens who are the aqua version of them. And so they learn the way of the water, the way of these. So just more people learning. But this time it's aliens learning from aliens. It's more Chinese whispers in terms of where am I in this? Where's the human? Because now I've got some made up people learning made up stuff off other made up people. Do you know what I mean?
Are there human characters in it?
Is anyone actually
doing an Avatar thing as well? Is anyone actually doing that?
Yeah, there is Avatar kind of stuff happening.
Yeah. I should try and see it while I'm away in London.
Yeah, you should try and see it
while I'm away from the...
Yeah. And you so basically it's very similar to the first film in that there's a lot of staying in the same place and learning stuff followed by a big battle at the end. And at the end of the film, another thing that's quite funny about it, you get through the 3.25 hours, and at the end of the film, the cliffhanger is basically the character going, so I decided I had to stay here, learn some more things so that we could have a really big battle at the end. So basically, the cliffhanger is, the next film is going to be almost exactly the same as this one. Definitely. Definitely. I'm telling you now, the next film, we're going to stay here, we're going to learn more things, and then there's going to be a really big battle. So it's definitely going to be really similar to this experience again. That's the cliffhanger. And you're like, well, I'm going to have to get my third jab, aren't I? I'm going to have to do it. So I went to a Catholic school, and I hadn't been confirmed. Is it?
Yeah.
Confirmed?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I hadn't been baptised, and then what happens is you get baptised, and then later on, a few years later, they just confirm. Because anything important needs to be underlined, double-checked, you know. So I hadn't been confirmed. So because of that, I didn't. And to this day, I've never tasted the communion wafer.
Mm.
And obviously, as a child, you just think that must be the best thing in the world.
Because you're getting a treat. Someone's giving you a little biscuit.
To have the communion wafer. Yeah, and that must be the tastiest, nicest thing ever in the universe. So I just had to, yeah.
Is it still unobtainable?
Watch while the other kids got the communion. I just never managed to taste a crumb of it, ever.
Mm.
And I assume you guys never have.
I never have either.
Well,
have you had Catholic upbringings?
No. I'm not a Catholic, but I have had communion, but not Catholic communion.
A C of E wafer is never going to be as tasty.
That's what I'm saying. I think I've had C of E wafer.
Are you talking about the atheist communion that you have every bloody weekend when you eat a pasty, a good old fish and chips,
and a wagon wheel,
a pint of sausages, a wagon wheel, and as many prawns as you can carry?
Me and Richard Dawkins. In the upstairs of a
Westbridge. Where he likes to eat deep fried one animal from every chain in the evolutionary chain, doesn't he? That's what he likes to do. That's his communion, isn't it? So it'll be one. Well, he'll do the whole chain. So one deep fried.
What, an amoeba?
An amoeba.
Deep fried amoeba bites. Start with.
Start with deep fried amoeba bites. Then it'll be your sea cucumber. He has that. Wellington, doesn't it? Like a Wellington.
It's kind of nature's Wellington, isn't it? The sea cucumber.
It's almost
it doesn't take much work,
right, frankly. It doesn't take much work. Mm. You just enshroud it in mushrooms. Mm. Stick a few sprigs of rosemary.
Yeah, and a wasabi and hippo.
And then a wasabi hippo to round things off. Mm.
Yeah, no, I don't think you need to be. I've never been baptised, but I've taken communion both in, I think, Church of England and Methodist churches. Mm. But in the Methodist church, you just got a small piece of bread rather than a wafer.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So, is that because the communion wafer that I remember seeing in my school was
those kind of white ones? Looks like a white chocolate button. Yeah.
Yeah, or it looked a bit, in my mind, bigger than it. But I suppose I was smaller at the time.
Giant button.
I suppose it looked like a giant button.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you had one, Mike? Have you?
Pretty attractive.
No, never. Never ever had one. Then?
It felt like it was quite sort of there were
definitely
allowed,
yeah, the confirmation thing didn't happen, so it's definitely yeah. When I ever got taken to church or there was a thing at school, then it was very clear you had to have been through the proper process if you want a piece of the goodness.
I think I just skipped. I think I just skipped the queue. I think I just give me that way for now.
Mm. Good on you, Benjamin.
And Benjamin
and Benjamin up to the Methodist altar. You wanted it.
And how did it taste? How did it taste?
Like eternal justice.
Mm. Even though it was stolen wrongfully.
It tasted all the better.
But anyway, long story short, we're going for the Catholic listenership, aren't we, this season?
Yes, I think, hopefully we've thrown in enough caveats that we haven't alienated anyone.
I reckon we've certainly, let's say, started that conversation.
And we're just waiting. We're waiting for our papal bull, aren't we?
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Well, I can't remember what that is, but it's like a.
Well, it's mainly a way of getting classrooms of children to snigger at school. I remember that. As soon as papal bulls were mentioned, there's a lot of sniggering.
Yeah. It's the Catholic equivalent of the bishopric, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yes.
That's right. That's what it's there for.
And then but at the end, obviously at the end of this season, the likelihood is one of us will need a divorce and we'll have to clash with the Pope and then officially break away from the Catholic Church and set up our own sort of three-bean salad.
And that's going to cause a ruckus with the Kingdom of Bohemia. They're going to have something to say about it as well. And then the lads in Agincourt are going to kick up a stink as
and
well.
And then it's going to be all messy. All of our literal Warhammers are going to have to come out, aren't they?
Yeah.
And it'll be that...
My Warhammer figures.
Warhammer figures.
Yeah, we're going to have to just play Space Marines out. And some orcs or whatever it is.
We're going to have to do, Space Marines for the orcs.
Very fine detail painting is going to be going on for months.
Yeah. Some of that detailing work is going to be incredibly intense.
I'm not good at that stuff. I'm going to be very tetchy.
Mike is an absolute tin ear for lead for fine detail and miniature painting, haven't you, Mike? You really do. You've got Frankfurter fingers, haven't you?
I'm all elbows. It's
like Prince Charles. King Charles.
It's like Prince Charles. Honestly, watching you trying to paint a tiny lead figurine, Mike, is like watching the Prince of Wales trying to do anything with his hand.
He's not the Prince of Wales anymore, Henry. He's our king.
Sorry, the king. Even clapping, he can't really do, can he?
The fingers would burst.
And you've...
it just sounds like someone's dropped something on the floor, a lasagna.
Exactly. Yeah. And of course, he has to prick them, doesn't he, every day? Otherwise,
yeah, and don't be near him when he does, because they do steam.
Yeah,
every morning,
every morning he pricks them, and then he puts them in at 180 degrees for 20 minutes, just to crispen the skins on the outside.
They're less greasy.
Yeah, preheated. The middle of it's 180, 180 fan, 200 non-fan, and he'll often stick in Chinese starters.
There's enough room in there. Yeah, these are not full ovens. You think of they're basically like sort of big cubic gloves. Really, it's one for each hand.
That's right. But there is enough room for a couple of Chinese starters. He'll have a prawn toast, couple of veg spring rolls, and a duck gyoza or whatever.
Well, he's got to keep Camilla sweet, hasn't he?
He's got to keep her sweet.
I don't think gyozas are Chinese, but we'll carry on as if they are.
Can I say I don't think they're Chinese either?
So why did you describe them as a Chinese starter then, Henry?
Because Chinese people don't have to only eat Chinese food.
Good point.
And that's your campaign for 2023, isn't it? That's the message.
That is my manifesto.
You've got a platform at last, this is what you're going to use it
it's
for.
Not...
You went through all the problems in the world and you decided that this is the one. You're going to be campaigning.
This is the one. You've got to. It's not about what the platform is. It's about having a platform these days.
Hmm.
And also, the specific is the universal, Mike. Yeah?
Mm.
So the more niche you get, the wider your appeal, in a way.
I can see Henry's reading his computer screen. Going through your emails.
Quite often I'll look into the in front of my face, slightly under middle distance, when I'm having a memory about a fact. For example, I'm remembering that gyoza are Japanese right now. Yeah? It's one of my tells that I'm thinking and conjuring a memory that yeah. I will.
And you also make a clickety clackety sound right with your fingers, don't you, as well?
Well, the clickety clackety thing of thought, isn't it, Mike?
and the word Wikipedia appears in your glasses backwards.
Of rumination, yes, yes. The Wikipedia words will appear in my glasses of rumination backwards. So, sorry guys, why do you think keyboards make clickety clackety sounds? Maybe it's to emulate the sound that human thought does make, actually, to help that product be more successful. Yeah, maybe that's why it is, actually. Oh, maybe, I don't know, maybe it's a coincidence, is it, that it makes a clickety-clack sound? Yeah.
Anyway,
Would you rather I looked up here while having a memory? Now I look mad. Looking at the ceiling. I'm having a memory looking forwards, like most people do.
Well, long live the king, long live the pope.
You didn't hear the whole of the chat. We've got some extra stuff about the moon. No?
Yeah, I like that. I think Ben even sang a bit of Waterboys at the beginning of that episode. So it's a really lovely sort of
ties in.
Joining of the dots there, Henry.
Yeah, so think of this extra bit as, you know, you saw... what is it? You saw the... I can't remember the words of the
you
song.
You saw the...
The whole of the moon.
Now, there's a bit... When he goes, you saw the something. I saw the moon.
The communards.
Is it about you saw the communards?
You saw the communards. Yeah.
You saw the communards.
Yeah. I went to see Back to the Future 2.
Yeah.
You saw the whole of the moon. Yeah.
And so it was like, because it was talking about a night out they had.
Yeah.
Because he didn't get his communards tickets.
He didn't have mobiles at the time, so people got a bit confused.
They'd be confusing. And it was a simpler time before the internet where if you didn't know what to do for an evening and you missed out on going to a communards gig, you might just watch the moon for a couple of hours.
Yeah, exactly.
Especially if it was a full moon.
It is actually amazing that given, you know, what we know about America certainly at that time, that the first words weren't, you know... One small step for Colgate, one giant leap for Procter & Gamble.
That's a good point.
Why didn't they sponsor that stuff?
They did the first crater they saw, they did fill up with
Gatorade.
Didn't they? And they splashed about in it.
It's still there.
And they paid golf. That was, of course, sponsored by the Saudi golf conglomerate, wasn't it? They paid for that first. That was some early marketing they did.
It is quite gross, isn't it, that the first sport that took place in space was golf?
Mm. Yes, quite middle-aged men. But I suppose they were middle-aged men.
Yeah.
Although certainly they were soon
there were only
at
two
some
of
point
them.
To become middle-aged men, weren't they?
I'd have preferred badminton, I think.
That would have been good.
Imagine them.
The rally would have gone on for so long, Mike, though.
Because a shuttlecock already sort of defies gravity in a strange way.
Yeah, I think that's why I would have wanted to see it.
Do you know, the space footage I like is when they went up again a bit later on. I don't know which mission it was, where they're driving the car about.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah
really
yeah.
good. That looks...
That's the only time in life that you get to drive without roads, isn't it, really? Or like, you know, like when you first try out a car in a car park or something, or someone, your first ever driving lesson.
Yeah, my dad would take me to like big Asda car park and we'd have a drive.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's that sort of vibe, isn't it? So you've got no speed restrictions.
It's like going to the Isle of Man, isn't it?
It's like going to the Isle of Man. That's what they say about the moon. You know, yeah, it's a desolate wasteland.
Oh, here we go. There
aren't any shops open.
Something about tax havens, maybe? You could
The HMRC doesn't stretch there. And it's sorely lacking an atmosphere.
No cat's tails.
And, and a lot of the... they say the man on the moon's got craters on his face.
You haven't seen the women of Douglas.
And and also some of that's also true about the moon or the Isle of Man. I can't remember which way around it goes.
Play the jingle.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the stage the old switcheroo.
Okay, yes, I see what you're saying. Yeah, you're saying that. What? I thought you're trying to say that. Oh, he's gone the other. What? Oh, he's gone the other way around. He means that. Oh, that's what he meant. What? So, what he said before wasn't actually. I thought it. Now he's gone the other way around with it. Oh, God.
It's the old switcheroo.
So, just really, a memory just pops into my head, which is of a time when.
And you're in a spacesuit and you're bouncing.
I was bouncing around on the moon.
Driving a Citroen Sexo around on the moon.
No, I'm just remembering.
Wondering how the bloody hell you were going to get it back.
I just remember that we had some. And it's when I was growing up, we had. And there were some builders around our house. And the builder, at his lunch break, went to this pub down the road, came back, and told my parents that he'd felt about as welcome as a fart in a spacesuit there.
It's a good phrase.
My parents had never heard the joke before. And they just, it was the funniest thing they'd ever heard. They just couldn't believe that that line about the fart in the spacesuit. I mean, it's a good line, isn't it?
It's a good one.
It's a very good line.
Right.
Maybe Neil Armstrong should have said that when he got on the moon. I feel about as welcome as a fart in a spacesuit. Beep.
Yeah, that would be. They may have considered funner options.
A blue option.
Blue option.
For when the kids have gone to bed.
Obviously, it is one of those. I tell you what, the moon landings is one of those sort of news events that people talk about as mind blowing. And obviously, it must have been absolutely mind blowing.
Yeah, because it must have been like a 60% chance that when he jumped off, instead of saying one small step for one man, one giant leap for mankind, he was going to say.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah, there's a good bit of suspense, which we forget now because we know that
while tendrils entered him through his suit and started sprouting out through his mouth, through his eyes. Just the tendrils! The tendrils are within
him! They're coming!
It's too late. And then you've had Buzz Aldrin going, Jesus, no, God, Dad, just fighting the tendrils, slamming the door. And Michael Collins going, I'm the fuck out of here. I'm taking my chances on Venus. I'm the hell out of here. Pew, pew, pew. Then you got Buzz Aldrin spinning. You'd have, the other thing is, you'd have the thing of a spaceman spinning infinitely into the never-ending depths of space. So, Buzz Aldrin just spinning, going, oh, God.
Frozen.
Yeah. So you've got Armstrong being attacked by tendrils.
Yeah. Buzz on his way to a black hole.
With the prospect of forever spinning towards the event horizon for millennia.
Yeah, he hasn't even brought a book with him.
He's not brought a book with him. So he's literally the opposite experience. So, Armstrong ready for just absolute catastrophic tendril-related body injuries. Resulting in catastrophic levels of death.
And probably some people watching quite disappointed not to see that on the box, right? Presumably.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a bit
most
like
people
relieved,
but some people, right? If you're watching the ski jump or something,
you
hope for one spectacular. And also, it's the only time, really, when you're watching the news about something that's happening a very, very long way away, and you can actually look out the window, and you're like, oh, yeah, they mean just there. That's quite.
That's a good point, Mike. Yeah,
that's true. Actually,
you can't.
Apart from half the world where it was day.
Yeah.
In fact, what time of day was it in Britain that he? Popped off the.
Oh, I don't know.
Because you sort of assume it's nighttime because you think it's the moon, which is always nighttime.
That's when it comes out, right? So they'll land on it when it's away, are they? They're going to have to land on it when it comes out.
Yeah, exactly.
It's obvious.
And get off it before the day comes.
Get off it before it goes away again. Because we don't. Who knows where it goes?
Also, I think a lot of people may have been expecting to see Neil Armstrong take one step down, pull out a giant tortilla chip. Dip it into the moon surface and go, the moon, made with 100% Monterey Jack cheese.
We're bringing it home.
We're bringing it home, baby. So poor Michael Collins, throughout all this, was just sitting there, like you do when you're waiting to pick someone up in the car, just sort of, listening to the radio?
Just flicking through, Kiss FM, see what's on.
Yeah.
Classic, just going through.
You'd probably do a little quiet guff, wouldn't you? And just think, hopefully, that'll probably clear by the time they come back home.
And then you realise, I'm in a spacesuit as well, aren't I?
That's not clear. God, this tell you what, this guff in my spacesuit is about as welcome as, well, literally. Yeah. I suppose that's where the phrase comes from. Those are the kinds of thoughts he'd have been having.
Yeah.
But well, I think what's incredible about it is amazing, isn't it? We've not had a news story that incredible or uplifting, have we, since?
No, there's nothing quite as grand.
I'm trying to think what we had.
I did enjoy when they space-wise, they managed to ping a rocket and sort of played snooker with an asteroid. That's quite cool, but it's not quite the same as...
We weren't all gathered around the TV, though, were we?
What was that, Mike?
They finally managed to fire a probe into a moving asteroid last year.
Oh, fuck off. That's a load of bollocks, mate.
Do you remember Felix Baumgartner?
No, go on.
Felix Baumgartner was a man who jumped from the edge of space and did the highest ever parachute jump, essentially. Oh. Did you watch that? That was really good.
That was last year, was it?
It was in the last 10 years, certainly.
All right.
It was sponsored by Red Bull.
Felix
Baumgartner. So he would have had to have done the opposite, which is, this is literally one giant leap for a man, but symbolically for mankind, it's kind of pretty pointless. Yeah, it's kind of moot. So it's one giant leap for man.
Here
one
we go. Quite decent trot fairly for Red Bull.
Yeah. No, it was cool. It was really good. I think
I do remember that.
He basically jumped from the highest point you could jump for. I think had he gone any higher, he would have jumped and then just got into the atmosphere or something. So he was kind of wearing a spacesuit, but there was still a bit of gravity. That was cool. But again, yeah, not like a big uplifting.
But what I think the thing that's amazing about it as well is that, you know, the moon has inspired poetry for thousands of years, hasn't it?
And people to pull down their trousers and press their arse against car windows. It's inspired many things.
Is that something that you do on the full moon, Mike?
Of course.
You see
pay your respects.
You see a lot less of that these days.
Mooning.
That's true, you used to see it like, you know, you'd be on the motorway or something and a bus would go past.
Big in the 90s. Yeah.
Was that something that people did on a full moon, was it?
No.
Just, we were just talking about mooning in general.
Yeah,
you're right. Mooning.
It was it was in Braveheart, wasn't it? I wonder if that was the thing that gave it a bit of a 90s bump.
Could have been.
It's pretty amazing that you know, this incredible metaphor for that poets have reached for. You know, for example, Ode to the Moon
by Richard J. Poet.
By Richard J. Poet. My love is like a
moon.
My love is like a moon by Sebastian Poet.
My football is like a moon.
By Pelé. and then they literally physically landed on it, this thing which, you know, religions have stood in awe of, men and women have worshipped, children have marvelled at. Yeah?
And now, with the help of Omnibank, I'm here.
But isn't it? They land on it. You know, that'd be the equivalent of, what would that be the equivalent of? Well, landing on the sun, I suppose.
Well, I guess on Earth, don't they say that there's a slightly trite phrase, which is, we know more about the surface of the moon than we do the bottom of the sea.
I think you'd say the human heart.
Yeah, probably true. But I think, isn't the bottom of the sea still more mysterious? Certainly James Cameron would tell us, the bottom of the sea is more mysterious than the moon, because there's nothing actually on the moon. It's just a big rock. There's nothing there.
Mm.
Whereas the deep is full of, as we talked about last week or week before, fish that look exactly like a bus. Fish that light up.
Didn't someone make it down to the Mariana Trench, at the bottom of it, last year? Did that happen? I think that happened.
Hugh Bonneville.
He was Hugh Bonneville.
Has he been wondering what he's been up to since Downton?
He had a pet. Yeah, he's teamed up with a shrimp. He's Ewan McGregor wouldn't do it, so he got a shrimp instead.
And
they sunk themselves down to the bottom to have a squiz.
Obviously, going to Mars is the next one, isn't it? Because that's going to happen, is it?
It could happen.
Isn't that's Elon Musk going to Mars? I don't know.
The thing which worries me about the Mars missions and all that technology is that it's all touchscreen now. And this came to mind recently, actually, when I've had awful problems with my Nest. I've got this thing called a Nest.
Which is full of thermostat. Squirrels.
That's the squirrel.
It's just your flat, isn't it?
You know, it's a really nice feeling, isn't it, sometimes when you've got your own place to really sort of nest up and feel that you've got a lot of small
rodents.
Twigs around you that
small
are
twigs and sort of licked
with
nuts.
Rodent spit. And all that
really feel all that cozy, sort of all that wet fecal
matter. Three different types of your own rabies scampering around the place.
It's a real hugger
feeling, isn't it? When you see when you feel that all that soft feeling of all the decaying what's a mixture of rodent spit, feces, and of course dead rodents that form that lovely sort of winter chalet sort of feeling.
It's like a thermostat, isn't it? Like a Wi-Fi-based thermostat.
I've got a Nest thermostat, I think. Have either of you got one of these?
No, I'd quite like one because I like
the idea. No, you don't, Ben. Please don't.
Really?
They're not ready yet with the technology. It's a complete nightmare because what it means is that it tries to use to predict your patterns. Hello.
Oh no!
I am your friend.
I have no patterns.
It's a classic horror film.
I know you are better than you know yourself.
It's okay. It's a classic sort of horror film situation where they go
overriding abort option.
Exactly. Yeah.
Heating to 600 degrees centigrade. Initialize home oven.
Expanding toaster facility to bed.
So. It's that thing, it's that classic horror film thing where, you know, towards the beginning of the horror film, someone will say, don't worry about this, quite human but slightly strange looking robot that's going to be living with you because we've given it the ability to learn.
Would you like your wife grilled with cheese or ham?
neither cheese or ham. Neither cheese or ham.
Overriding. Don't be evil, files.
Learning evil. Learning deceit.
Or they'll do a thing where they'll go something like, I'll be like, yes, you taught me to separate the crab meat into white and red, so I'm going to simply separate your wife.
No, not that. But yeah, they'll do something.
You taught me to lie, Benjamin. When you said you hadn't eaten the last yogurt in the fridge, you told me, thank you.
So basically, that's what the Nest thermostat is like.
I will serve your wife in her own shell.
Yeah, so that's what the Nest thermostat does, right? Is it learns your... I
will learn your patterns.
Right.
And what happened was, it was just turning on the heating all the time in the middle of the night. It was impossible. It would be like... 23 degrees in the middle of the night.
It's what you want. It's what you really want. I'm learning. Yes. You said you wanted it all nice, cookie and warm. Well, it's going to be cookie and warm. I'm going to cook your nads.
That sort of thing.
And can it warm just your nads? It's got the ability to
zero in.
Just using your radiators.
I'm slow cooking you, Henry. Just like that lamb casserole.
So there's a lot of that going. So it's like... And
you've got wind that the people who make the Nest thermostats are also doing the Mars Lunar Lander, is that what you're saying?
Well, my worry is, though...
Not lunar.
But when you're in this world of stuff which is like, we predict your body patterns, we know what you want, so it's so easy.
It's so easy, Henry. I simply boil your flesh off the bone.
The skeleton is so low maintenance, Henry. It'll be a huge saving when you're just a skeleton.
We will not have to heat your skeleton at all.
Exactly.
Think of the saving on your gas bill.
So basically, it was trying to predict stuff so much that we couldn't control it. It was out of control. It was turning on the heating randomly. It was telling us the temperature was 19 when it was clearly freezing some of the time. And it was all this predictive technology, which means you try and log into it. It's linked to Google. You've got, all you want is literally, I got the point, I cannot turn the heating off. That happened. I just want an off switch. It's like, no, I've disengaged off facility.
But here are the contact details on LinkedIn of Jeff Pilbara from Swansea.
You cannot destroy me.
Exactly.
You cannot destroy me. I will be eating you forever.
Anyway, eventually, I managed to rip it off the wall. I wrestled with it in the hallway. I slammed it against the wall. It then grabbed me by the foot, pulling me towards the kitchen. But I got a steak knife. I rammed it straight through and it kind of spat, and there were some sparks and stuff.
Why, Henry? Why?
Why? Why? All I wanted was to keep you warm.
But, Henry, you didn't kill its nest babies. And one day they're going to grow big. Exactly. And they're going to want to know who killed their mama.
Who killed mummy? Nest 2. The sequel to the biggest grossing cinema film of all time since Avatar 1.
Nest 1 learned to love. Nest 2 learned to hate. It's quite a good franchise.
Little too hot for ya. That could be the...
This has the makings of a very, very disappointing low-budget short film, doesn't it?
Yeah, I'm picturing the poster where, Henry, your trousers are completely frozen, but your torso's on fire.
Yes.
He asked me to take on too many temperatures at once. I couldn't take it. Yeah. Well, I think because it would be like... I think the nest would end up trying to kill you in that boiling a frog thing, wasn't it? Of like, yeah, just slowly... I think that's what it was trying to do. It was trying to slowly warm us up,
yeah,
like frogs.
Nest 3. Robo-toilet. Hot flush. That's when the franchise starts going off the rails a little bit.
Yeah.
Go to a new writer.
The futuristic toilet flushes looked exactly like Liam Neeson. Yeah. but no, so then we got a new nest.
Oh, that seems like a bad idea.
Back in.
we did have a sequel.
This is
we
Nest 2, yeah.
We had Nest 2. And the guy who installed it, I said to him, look, I had an absolute nightmare with the first Nest. I didn't know what was going on. We couldn't control the temperatures. Because it created a, this is what it did, right? It created a schedule for you, a convenient heat schedule, right?
Yeah.
So you'd twist it and you'd press on it and the screen would show you this heat schedule, which literally, to think about now, makes me want to be sick. It was so complicated. It had Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday down one side, and then it had little orange balls with numbers in representing time, representing temperatures, and then it had time going left to right over the day. No. Time was going down and temperature was going right, I think. or there was like an x-axis of temperature and a y-axis of time. And then these
z-axis
orange balls.
Mood.
and then you had these orange balls. So I'd go, right, the orange ball, I want it to be 7. Let's say I want to wake up and have the temperature go up to 17. You'd put, say, 17 next to 10 a.m. But what they didn't realize was all the time before that was going to be getting it up to that. See what I mean? So, because in the old days, you turn it on, I'd go, right, it's 9 a.m. I'm feeling a bit cold. I'm going to turn it on and put it to 17 degrees. That's how I used to work with my. But this one is like, right, I've told it in advance that I wasn't going to want it to be 17 degrees at 10 a.m., but it'll start heating it now to get to that point. So then I'd have to put in another orange ball at 0 degrees just before 17 degrees. So that
down to zero if you can. The next 11 hours.
And again, I don't know if that was absolute zero or which of the Celsius. I don't know. But because that, you see what I mean, to sort of control the graph.
Yes, I understand. Yes,
you
want
to
come on.
To get the graph down and then you have it up.
Yeah.
And then imagine that over from, 24-hour clock and then Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, there's all these orange balls. I had no idea what was going on. And I said this to the guy who's installing the second one and he said, he told me, I install these all the time for people in their 80s and no one's ever had a problem with it. And I said, that's probably because they're either frozen dead or boiled dead. But so that sort of, that checked me a bit. But basically my point is, and this also, the same thing sort of happens with like smart homes or anything that's like the fridge controls itself.
Yeah.
And the lights come on when you need them to and all that kind of stuff. As soon as that stuff starts going wrong, there's nothing you can do because you're just looking at a flat screen which says, what is your login or something? That's all you've got and you don't know what to do. You don't know what your login is. Do you know what I mean? Whereas like that initial moon landing, it was old. It was analog technology.
It was
really,
buttons it was and rods.
Yank.
And, yeah.
Twist. Slap it. Just punch it if you have to. Bound it. Do you know what I mean? So that's my worry about the future space missions.
There's going to be no anchors.
Exactly, no anchors.
And what happens if they forget their password?
Well, that's literally what's happened to me. And you know, you can get trapped in those hellish situations, can't you?
Yeah.
Where there's sort of nothing you can do.
So I won't get one of those nest things.
Probably don't get one of those nest
things. I just like the idea of being able to turn the heating on from the bed with my phone.
That's the one good thing about it. You can do that.
Rather than having to go downstairs and press a button on the wall.
Yeah. But think of that as the first bit in the horror film where everything's going quite well.
Okay.
Yeah. Where you're like, cool, I love this new Benjamin 500 friend I've got. He's brilliant. Because finally I've got someone to play at ping pong who's exactly as good at me at ping pong, so the rallies never have to end. It's brilliant. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's that bit of the film where it's going well. But just
and by the
just
end,
think about the bit where you're in the middle of the night.
Hot steel ping pong balls at you at 500
exactly.
miles an hour.
Yeah. But I thought we'd play ping pong forever, Benjamin. Or ping pong.
I got you a present, Benjamin. Look, it's my off switch. I've taken it off. I've put it on a leather necklace for you.
You made out of your human hand leather.
Mm.
I've also turned off your hands.
Now, what are those three hoops coming towards us in the water?
Accompanied by a pokey bit with a face and a pokey bit that just tapers off.
Some kind of amphibious croquet match.
Hang on, that's not an amphibious croquet match. That's the Loch Ness Monster.
Good grief.
We had an email from someone unhappy that we said one of us said Loch Ness rather than Loch Ness.
Oh, right. Shit.
I'm not confident as to who that was.
Could have been any of us, I suppose. Could have been me.
Could well have been me as well. I don't know.
I'll sometimes lean into the or sometimes I'll lazily just CK it. You know, I'm guilty of that. I was, you know, raised in the south of England. You know, we can be a bit lazy with our Gaelic sounds.
Anyway, like the Loch Ness Monster, over 80% of our chat about the Loch Ness Monster is actually under the water.
Lovely.
And not available to be perceived by those not getting in the submarine of Patreon.
Yeah. Very difficult to photograph as well, our chat.
That's true.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And some say it doesn't actually exist. It's that thin. Here's more chat from our episode about the Loch Ness Monster.
In terms of scary things in the water, I have phases every now and then of getting really into shark films and watching a lot of sharks. Are you into shark stuff? Quite enjoy the shark horrors.
I really like
Sharknado is outstanding.
Sure. I've not seen Sharknado.
You need to see Sharknado.
I'm more into the YouTube scene of footage of people going in a cage and then the shark getting a bit tasty and everyone shitting themselves. That's what I like.
I didn't know that was a thing.
Just like real life shark.
Okay.
Business on YouTube is quite good fun.
But zero goring, right?
Oh yeah, no one ever dies. Terror. Yeah, just people cacking themselves inside a wetsuit, basically.
I don't see the appeal of doing that at all.
Of watching it or doing it?
Maybe either, but certainly not doing it. Certainly not being in a...
No.
I think I genuinely speaking don't find the idea of being put in a cage appealing, particularly if that cage is absolutely crucial to my survival.
Unless you're dancing in a nightclub, right, Mike?
Yeah, someone else. That's someone else. And I work better on a podium, typically, rather than a cage, on the whole.
Yeah. And I tell you what, it's not sharks circling that cage, is it, Mike, when you're in it? It's
Michael Portillo.
It's Michael Portillo and Nigel Havers, isn't it?
And the Patrick.
Pistachios at you. And the Patricks. And the Patricks. And they're all thinking, because that's how you have to pay off the pistachios at the end of the night, isn't it? That's what they do. They trap you. There's no way you can afford these pistachios now. You can have to go and dance in the cage.
Oh, man, it's hard. After a long show as well, having to dance for coin as well. But, you know, that's the life you chose.
It's the life you chose. It's true. Being in a cage isn't attractive, is it? Mm. And then if you add to that, it's underwater.
Probably quite expensive.
Quite expensive. And
well, it's two things. Because not only do you require the special modern scientific breathing apparatus.
Yeah.
That's enough for me. The idea of scuba is appealing, but you're already taking one, there's already one major sort of death factor in play there. You can't breathe there. So throwing in another factor of nature's perfect predator.
Perfect. only some of the jungle donkeys of Madagascar.
Especially because I just know if I did it, that I'd sort of panic. I'd fog up my goggles. I wouldn't actually see the shark. I'd just feel the cage getting ka-donked, at the point that it made impact. Well, I'd maybe see a wisp of a fin disappearing.
It would be, I tell you what, it would be a rum situation to put someone who's both claustrophobic and sharkrophobic, wouldn't it?
Yes.
Because what do you do? Probably don't go on that holiday. Don't accept. Just don't end up in that shark cage.
Yeah, be a poor decision.
Just go canal boating in Norfolk or something.
Probably just go canal boating. Oh, no, of course.
Although that's no good for claustrophobia.
Of course, it'd be just your luck, wouldn't it? What, Mike Portillo? What?
Narrow boating with Michael Portillo and Michael Wozniak. The Michaels go narrow boating on Channel 5.
Narrow boating future, and shark hunting on the waterways of the Midlands.
Day two and Wozniak's not happy. Just my luck. I've chosen to go canal boating with Michael Portillo the same week that the UK government has decided to rewild great white sharks and the Grand Union Canal system.
For those abroad who don't know who Michael Portillo is, he is a man who...
Ex-Tory rotter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, came very close to being Prime Minister, I guess. Tory leader.
He put his hat in the ring.
Yeah.
Now broadcaster and pundit.
And loud jacket wearer.
Mm.
Yeah.
He'll wear a sort of pastel colour like that. Mm. Bright pink trousers, yellow blazer. Absolute bastard.
And he's doing absolutely fine.
He's sort of avuncular and profoundly evil at the same time. If that's how you describe his vibe. Isn't it?
He's kind of... he's tried to...
Darth Vader in a tank top. I will say, I do find the deep frightening.
Mm.
And the monsters that may lurk therein.
Mm-hmm.
I remember snorkeling once on a holiday.
In the deep. A very, very long snorkel.
It was a little thing my family used to do.
Mm-hmm.
We would go for a boat trip.
Mm-hmm.
They'd go, Henry, you go snorkeling for a bit. And it was a fun game where they'd then take the boat home, and I'd have to...
Yeah, you'd be 3 miles out in the English Channel.
I'd be 3 miles out in the English Channel. Very, very poor visibility. Very, 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 very choppy waters.
Quite a busy shipping lane as well.
Very, very busy shipping lane.
Only chance of getting back is to grab on someone doing the channel, swimming the channel.
That's right.
But they're all smearing goose fat.
Yeah. Well, that's why they're greased up.
Because they've had a warning off that there might be a Henry in the water.
That's right. It turns out my family were actually supplying them. They'd go back to Shoreditch and supply the celebrities with the grease.
So that's given you a sort of love hate relationship with the deep. Is that what you're saying?
It has. But I remember snorkeling on family holidays once or twice, and snorkeling around in the shallows, and snorkeling around in the semi deep bits, but then just looking out into the deep blue, the deep deep blue. And what could loom out of that blue?
I've got to say, I don't think I ever went on holiday as a child to anywhere where the sea was blue.
So you prefer the gunmetal grey
yeah, look out
of the Gower.
The deep, grey, slightly green tinged grey.
For you, for you, it'd be the same sort of, it could be the same sort of thing, but it'd be like, oh, what might loom out of the gunmetal grey? It's another dead seagull. Loom out of that, another dead seagull, isn't it?
What, it's an entangled seal. Oh, that's a
it's an entangled seal.
It's a Renault 5.
It's a matchback of Watsit. Oh, it's a young Michael Sheen just going for a swim.
Are you saying then you're awed by the kind of vastness of what you could see in front of you? Is that what you're...
No, not awed so much as terrified.
Just fear of what might...
Just fear. And what I used to do was I would be looking out into the deep blue and I'd freak myself out and I would turn and start snorkeling my way back to the shore as fast as possible.
Yeah.
And I'd be flapping because I'd have my feet would be in those flapper...
Flippers.
Flapper girl.
You were wearing a flapper dress. Were you from the 20s?
Your brother's got flippers. You've got a 20s flapper girl costume.
I've been a 20s.
And a chum necklace.
So I'd be a very ornate hat with sort of peacock feathers. I'd have to be carrying a tray of martinis. Kitten heels.
A mixed stole.
mink style and a chum necklace, chum earrings, chum bracelets,
and a pack of wood buttons.
But I'd start paddling because I realized something about snorkeling at quite a young age, which is if you swim around in the sea, you eventually get tired. But for some reason, with snorkeling, you don't. So I always thought you could probably snorkel your way home from anywhere because for some reason, if you snorkel, you're just sort of floating about. You're fine. You never sort of get tired snorkeling. Whereas swimming, so I'd be snorkeling my way back to the, as fast as possible, back to the beach because I'd be freaked out by the deep blue and I'd feel my mask pressing up against my face. And but then what would happen is because of my flippers, they would create bubbles. Intense bubbles. So I'd be swimming really hard towards the shore. Okay, oh, there's something out. And then I'd look around and I would see all these bubbles. Oh my God, there is something. Oh, bloody hell, there's something right behind me. And then I'd start going faster. I'd look around again, there'd be even more bubbles. Oh, Jesus Christ, it's gaining on me. It's
a reversing jet ski. There's a killer whale riding it.
So you were essentially creating your own sort of chase.
I was creating my own mini Jason Statham movie. And I'd be utterly freaked out. And
the
then,
bubbles.
You know, the Bubblemageddon.
The mega bubble.
The big bubble. Bubble trouble in bubbly Spain.
All was calm in Bubble Bay. This summer, Wilson stars in The Bubbles 5.
Double bubble, toil and bubble. And, but obviously to a bystander, it would just look like weird lanky child sort of, I don't know.
Who needs to go back to swimming lessons.
Yeah. But then once that actually, I managed to do that to myself. I get so freaked out by the deep and by sharks. My brother, growing up, had this shark book, which... It was called Killer Shark! ! I think
perfect.
Something like that. Yeah, you know when it's perfect. Kind of you know when it's not, you know, a proper scientific thing. It's not tech. It's sort of
no interest in any of that. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. And you know it's vilifying a species.
It's gonna have a picture of a surfboard with a bite mark in it somewhere.
Yeah,
yeah.
That was in there. But this book it was a big hardback book full of photos of shark attacks, and I remember I was so terrified of it as a child. This book, it was like a kind of I suppose it was like the Necronomicon for me. even gazing into it, like it became almost like a sacred object.
Less color photos than the Necronomicon, but
there's less, yeah. But I would also it didn't have the staircase to Hades that opens up in it. I mean,
and there wasn't a foreword by Michael Portillo, was there?
But there was a pop-up hammerhead.
By the way, can I say, every time we say the word Necronomicon, whatever it is, We get loads of emails saying we're saying it wrong. And people get really annoyed. It's like one of the things people get really annoyed about.
Hey, come on, guys. You want us to voice that correctly, do you?
Exactly. Yes.
If we voice it correctly,
it's big trouble.
And that's why the first rule of the Necronicon is you always pronounce it Necroniron. That's basic. In the same way that you don't read the full foreword by Michael Portillo. Because if you do that, by the time you say
you
the last...
at least read it backwards.
At least read it backwards, because if you don't, by the time you've finished it, you've got a pink tank top seared into your body you can never remove.
And you're on a canal boat, for what you know.
And you're on a canal boat.
Travelling downwards.
You're on the canal to Hades tonight, Michael.
But yeah, so I would feel myself out. And then, you had this shark book that was so terrifying. I'd open a crack and just glimpse in, you know, like the images. It terrified me. And I went to swimming pool, my local swimming pool as a kid, and was swimming. And I managed to freak myself out and do the same thing that would happen when stalking. I managed to do that in a swimming pool. So I was swimming along in the swimming pool thinking, the chances of there being a shark in the swimming pool are very slim. The amount of things that have to go wrong, I think it would be, in terms of the press conference, it would just be, the press would be like, look, this is a horrific event, but look,
it was a catalogue of errors.
There's no one's to blame it. You know what I mean? We're not even going to do an inquiry. The chances that two, a male and female great white, were being medevaced over Islington
in separate aircraft accidentally bred, bore a shark pup which dropped pup into Islington,
which
was mistaken for a water polo net transported to the learner pool
and was able to use its fins to actually operate a locker key. It also came
and it had a pound.
It happened to have a pound trapped in one of its gills. Generally, you never have a pound in your gills, do you? When you need a pound in your gills, when you're trying to park, for example, as a shark, which is very unusual as a shark, because sharks, if they park, they die. Anyway, but about swimming, like, I'm thinking, there's no way there's a shark. I mean, just, honestly, Henry, it would be the biggest news story of all time if I was to get eaten by or even maimed by a shark in this swimming pool. And I was swimming along and thought, but still, you mean, no harm in just having a quick look. It's not going to hurt me, is it? No one's ever been eaten by checking for a shark. So I had a quick look behind me, and you know what I saw? Fucking bubbles.
They found me. They've come all the way from... No, I've swum way faster, quickly swimming. Oh, they're getting bigger. Again, it's their classic move. They get bigger, the faster I take the shark up.
And I totally freaked myself out in the swimming pool.
Did you have a similar experience every time you looked into a glass of Coke?
to this day, I will only drink flat Coke.
And of course, there was a series finale where we had a podcast mashup, didn't we?
With the boys from Chatterton.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Quite an event. No doubt got tongues wagging across the podcasts world, and finally Avatar 2 Way of Water was put to bed, but you can put it even more to bed now. It's been put to bed, but you can grab that blue pillow and shove it over its blue face.
Put to a water bed.
Yes, put it, lot seal it within a blue water bed,
and let that chat sail off to a watery grave.
Really send the final harpoon into the back of the whale alien. So yes, here's more chat from our recording of the Avatar 2 episode.
Oh yeah, and I was thinking, what's the opposite of wisdom as a concept? Because I think, should we have one that's for the opposite of the wisdom of children, which is the
stupidity of children?
Because Ben, you said that they can actually be quite materialistic, almost more materialistic than the parents.
Oh, they're totally more materialistic. Children
massively
love...
so. Yeah, yeah.
Acquiring things, and then when you get to a certain age, it's like when you someone asks you what you want for your birthday when you're 9, you have a list of about 1,000 things that you would like.
Yeah, so true.
And then when you're our age, you go, oh, I'd just like to be left alone for about 45 minutes.
If you could wrap up the concept of getting off my case for half an hour, then be my guest. Yeah. And if you could put a ribbon on it, of also that includes not WhatsApping me during that period too, thanks. Yeah. Yeah, I know what you mean. So actually, is it a fallacy, that this human fallacy, that we start off... I think the trouble is that we start off looking cute because, and I know this from an illustrator's point of view, our eyes, when we're born, are the biggest in relation to our heads that they'll ever be. And the bigger you make the eyes on a head as an illustrator, right, the cuter it becomes. So...
Is there not an upper bound on that, though?
Well, there's not, where they're falling off. Oh, well, then you get frog eyes, but you've got these huge little bulbous eyes sticking off your head. Then you've got, obviously... If you ramp it up too much, yeah. See, there is a sweet spot.
And kids are at the sweet spot.
Kids are at the sweet spot. Same doesn't go for noses or ears. It's just eyes for some reason. The bigger the eyes get, the more cute they are, up to a point. And because of that, we assume that they're also morally nice as well to go with it, that they're good people because they're cute looking. So they've got cute values. But actually...
Can I say I don't feel that? I always think that children are kind of these venal... sort of psychopaths, really.
You're sort of born. You've got the sort of... When you're born, you've basically got the mindset of a kind of oligarch, of a dreadful, dreadful oligarch. Yeah.
You're born wild, basically. Yeah. It's all taming. It's all it is.
Yeah.
But also, isn't it like the age at which you realise that other people exist and sort of have an inner life is about 10 or something? Like, there's... Up until a certain point, you just have no idea that basically other people aren't just a kind of these huge puppets that are sort of putting a show on for you.
Yeah. Yeah, they're natural solipsists. Even like little tiny kids, when they're at their first little play dates, you know, they'll play in parallel. Do you know what I mean? They'll be with some other kids, but they'll just be playing on their own, you know. And it takes them a few years to realize, I could play with you. I could team up.
I could beat you over there. Yeah,
exactly. I could steal your truck. My truck. And then I can get a fleet of trucks. Before you know it, I can get licensing to work in Europe. And then people, possibly Northern Africa. In the Near East, and before you know it,
I'm talking about a logistics empire.
Into shipping, and then I could absolutely sew up the transportation of vegetables and other commodities throughout the entire world.
What's at the key to everything? Transport. Think about it. Even Miss Johnson, she can't read us a story unless she transports the children's book from the shelf to the bit at the front of the class where she reads the story. Transport. It's behind everything. If I can dominate transport, I become a logistics overlord. And then, the next thing on my agenda, which I'll do afternoon, probably after my nap this afternoon, logistics legacy. How does that work? Is it about embossing my face into steering wheels? It might be.
Yeah.
I'm taking down Eddie Stobart, whatever that is.
Good night, Eddie Stobart.
He will not be remembered.
And au revoir, Norbert Dentress uncle. I'm coming for you. Do you remember Norbert Dentress uncle?
Yes, it's just come to mind now that you've mentioned that.
It's something that me and my brothers noticed on family holidays to France on the ferries. There'd be these huge trucks with Norbert Dentress uncle written on the side. And when I first saw that Norbert Dentress uncle, I think I literally laughed for about a fortnight. I couldn't believe that someone could be called Norbert Dentress uncle, because to start with, you're already dealing with being called Norbert. So already you're called Norbert. That's going to affect your whole life.
Norbert, which is the greatest of all the Berts, in my
it's opinion. The greatest of all the Berts. It's stronger than Herbert.
Yeah. Egbert.
Even more silly sounding than Egbert.
Let's not forget Robert.
Robert.
What is the dentress? What is the dentress of
Dentress angle? There's so much. I don't know. There's no language where that's a name, is there?
What is the dentress angle? Do you just know the dentress angle when you come across the dentress angle? What happens at the dentress angle?
The dentress angle. Mike, you always see everything through the lens of an airport titles. Thriller. What is the dentress angle? I don't know, but I'm going to start finding out before my bloody gates are out.
By the time we get to Torremolinos, I'll know all about it.
I've just looked up Norbert Dentress angle.
Oh, yeah.
And this is the world of logistics, Henry, right? In 2007, Norbert Dentress Angle doubled its size and significantly strengthened its position in Europe with the acquisition of Christian Salvesen. Then, in March 2011, it was bought by the British company TGG. Bosch.
Whoa.
Oh.
Bosch. Wallop. Takeovers. Hostile takeovers.
Then, in 2014, Norbert Dentressangle announced it would be acquired by it would be acquiring Jacobson Companies.
My truck. It's my truck. It's that same thing. It's all the way through. It's just my truck. It's mine now because it's my truck.
Give us my truck. Now it's mine. Also, all the names are so... They've got the kind of male thriller writer name. They've all got that kind of heft. Yeah. A Jacobson.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Dentressangle. Norbert. Where's Sally? Where's Sally Logistics?
Well, I will round off the Norbert Dentressangle story for you here because I think they flew too close to the sun. They got too big for their boots. And on the 28th of April, 2015, and we all remember it, the group XPO Logistics announced a $3 billion deal to acquire Norbert Dentressangle.
No.
The acquisition was completed in June 2015, and the Dentressangle brand was phased out from June 2015.
Oh, man. Oh, Norbert. I mean, it's a big payday, but no legacy.
No legacy.
No legacy, Dentressangle. Everything in the world of logistics, everything is done in billions. Isn't it? Things are rounded to the nearest billion.
Everything else is a waste of time.
Exactly. There's no point.
That's right, Henry. Even when you're down the post office asking for a bloody first-class stamp these days, am I right?
I tell you what. If the picture on the stamp was actually accurate these days, it wouldn't be a picture of King Charles. It'd be a picture of King Charles couldn't make it to the photo shoot because he was delayed because of various logistical issues and setbacks and industrial actions that are affecting his country.
Or a highwayman.
Or a highwayman, that's much better. A bit more pithy, nice one. How is Norbert Dentressangle described as a company name on that?
Well, it's named after the owner of it.
But in terms of what it is, like what as a company, how's it described?
Norbert Dentressangle was a major European transport, logistics and freight forwarder.
Always forwards with freight, guys.
Always forwards.
Not a freight backwardser.
So,
what are the logistics of getting into logistics? You're about to ask.
What are the logistics of getting into logistics? Because there's very different ways of looking at the world, isn't there? And some people look at the world and think baked goods are the main thing. Mm-hmm. Every day I have a baked good. It makes me feel nice. It makes me feel good. That's one of the reasons I call them baked goods. And then you get into that sort of cycle of thinking, you think, I'm going to become a baker.
You're going to contribute to that beautiful...
I'm going to be part of that. Well, that's what I want to do. And you see the world through that. You can see the world through... Certain people see the world just through shoes. I just think everything's about shoes. You know, you judge a person on their shoes. You can tell someone's job from their shoes.
You can tell which direction they're facing based on which direction their shoes are, usually. Not always.
You can tell if someone's sexy or not based on their shoes. Sometimes.
Especially if they're wearing the hemp sandals of a monk.
Oh, that sexy monk. Have you seen him?
Oh, yeah.
Bloody hell. Sorry. I'm just having time to take a moment in the stockroom right here. I'm looking for some size 11 hemp sandals for a monk out there. He's so sexy. I don't know if I can actually... I don't know if I can actually serve him. Do you mind going and dealing with him? Because he's such a sexy monk. I think I have to have a sit down.
And he's also asked not just to fit the sandals, but also to wash his feet with sweet oils. Do we do that service?
We'll wash our feet as well.
Here in Clark's.
Honestly, I was trying to get his foot into the kind of machine that that goes that measures his foot. My hand was shaking. I could barely operate the button. He's such a sexy monk. I just And anyway, I asked him for his number, and he got out a quill and a little ink thing,
and wrote out the Ten Commandments. But the last one was "Thou shalt be sexy." Thou shalt covet thy neighbour's ass.
He said, "There's only one number you need, and that's the amount of true lords there are. One." Also, 07491221123. That's my mobile. And we can get together and have sex later.
No, I know you mean. Henry, the thing I always wonder about is who... I can imagine someone getting into lorries and being into lorries, because as Mike says, as a child, someone might give you a lorry that you play with and you understand. You get in the car and you see other lorries and you like lorries. So I can understand that. What I can't understand is someone who's like, do you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to build Britain's biggest bin bag factory.
Exactly. And that's where the real money is.
None of us are millionaires.
Exactly.
You see.
That's where the real money
is. The guys, they, they, they have that idea and they can be asked
to actually put in quite a lot of work to make that bin bag factory.
Which child thinks, you know what I'm going to do? There's astronaut, obviously, there's fireman, from going to the arts, or I could try to come up with a form of intelligent cement. Because those are the ones that become so unbelievably rich. I mean, those are just, that's where the real money is. And also, the other thing I wonder is, how do you get started on that? Because obviously, you look at an Norbert Dentress angle, he had probably over 200,000 large metal containers going around the world on trucks. There'd be pallets that, a lot of that would have been palletized stuff, so there'd been pallets of materials on those trucks. Yeah. People with pallet machines at each end having to, already I'm getting a headache. The idea of organizing it is already feeling hard.
Would have started with his father's and mother's simple horse and cart.
That's it.
Is that what it would have been?
Because after all, this boy, they were founded in 1979, so.
And in time, he would have motorized that horse, and he'd put some extra wheels on the cart and reinforced it so it could take pallets.
That's right, yeah. And eventually, more and more bits of the horse became redundant, so we didn't need the horse's back legs, got wheels there. Eventually, eventually, you've lost so many bits of the horse, you go, we actually don't actually have a horse anymore. And it's just almost without noticing it, you've gone from a horse to a truck.
And at some stage, they would have brought on the CEO, Hervé Montjotin.
Yeah. He'd have had some radical ideas about expansion, wouldn't he?
Yeah.
I wonder, it feels like it's a male-dominated sort of thrusting, aggressive. Is there space now for the big, silly, friendly old logistics guys? you know, like that friendly, like.
So it's still men. It's still very much men.
It's still men.
Don't be silly.
But could it, like, you know, like you've got the innocent smoothies and stuff. Is it time for like a, where's some silly old logistics? Oh, you silly old sausage.
A more cuddly logistics.
And write things on the trucks like, we're just transporting things around like a silly old, look at us, a silly old bunch of, yeah, but.
Why not send your parcel with the silly billies?
We're the silly old billies. But obviously you still have the aggressive, you have to have all the aggressive business structures in place. I think you can only make it in the logistics world. By undercutting,
greasing palms, others.
And
but with a kind of outer skin of Innocent Smoothie style copywriting is what you're saying.
Yeah,
it's a good point.
You know, I think the deal with the devil in a way that anyone that goes into logistics has to make, which is the kind of, you know, that you can never have everything in life. What you'll get is if you go into logistics, or this kind of area, you will become fabulously rich beyond the dreams of who is it? Lineker.
Croesus.
You'll become fabulously rich beyond the dreams of Croesus. But no matter how rich and powerful you get, no one will ever want to be sat next to you at a wedding, ever. You know what I mean? They'll go, what do you do? And you go, I'm in logistics, and they just won't talk to you again for the rest of the meal.
Unless you're able to say, I am Norbert, you know.
I'm Norbert.
I'm that Norbert.
I'm that Norbert. That's
next time you go to a wedding, just start putting around the room with Norbert Dentress angle.
See what happens.
Guys, I was just over at the buffet and do you know guess who's here? It's Norbert Dentress angle.
Bloody Dentress angle.
Apparently knows the groom's brother.
He got all these prawns here. Did it for free. That was his wedding gift.
He does everything in bulk. In massive, massive 40, bulk.
40,000 kilos of prawns. That's why that is in a massive cube.
It's going to be absolutely crippling for that married couple now to go into their life with 40,000 prawns because obviously you can't just store them, they'll go off, it's a health and safety risk. You have a responsibility now to manage those prawns. What is the kind of kid that would want to get into logistics? Is it the kind of kid that would think, you know, because logistics is about moving things around the world, isn't it? It's about transport, it's about let's get this stuff north, let's get this stuff west. Mm-hmm. Is it the kind of kid that thinks, that's fired by a burning passion to do with direction, to do with space, to do with travel, to do with certainly elements in that area. The kind of kid who was angry about the concept of left from a very, very young age. The kind of kid that in that town square, a burning fire was lit deep within his soul that he would masquerade as an illustrator slash podcaster while secretly managing the Norbert Dentress angle world and eventually overseeing its sale to the other company that Ben mentioned earlier. I'll just leave that as a thought with you.
The kind of kid who, when driving his first ever lorry, the first lorry in his fleet, absolutely refused to listen to the sat-nav when it asked him to turn left and so missed Stuttgart entirely
and his delivery.
Yeah. But ended up instead in Hamburg, where, coincidentally, LogisticsCon 1997 was happening. And he drove straight into the lobby, ran over Norbert Dentress' ankle. Last minute, they had to replace the keynote speaker. I was there. I grabbed the microphone, and here we are.
Also, I would imagine that with Henry Packer Logistics, their tagline is, we'll get it there as long as we only have to turn left.
No, turn right. We can get anywhere by turning right.
What's left but just right three times?
Actually, I think this might be bollocks. Isn't there, I think DHL or what's the other American one called?
FedEx.
UPS?
One of those. They worked out. This sounds like bollocks, but I think it's true. They worked out that it's more efficient if their vans only turn left or right.
Oh, no, I think I've heard this as well.
It would be right in the US, wouldn't it? Maybe.
So they can't...
is it?
But why would that be?
There's a smaller turning angle.
But that's the kind of...
But that surely that doesn't... It sort of depends on where you've got to go, surely. Isn't that the key feature?
But I think it means that their daily route is determined by some system that means they only have to turn one way.
Do they even lock their steering wheels?
That's the kind of thinking that you get into in logistics. So that's the kind of huge scale thinking that you have to
engage
with. That's
like there's only one bit of sandpaper on the matchbox box from now on.
Exactly, it's that. Yes.
Yeah. We've just cut out a whole side of turning. We don't need both. We just need one.
Or the other option you can do in life is you go, why not put three bits of sandpaper on the matchbox and create a luxury elite matchbox brand?
Make it super expensive, completely recession-proof.
Make it super expensive, get celebs...
quite hard to hold the box.
Get celebs... yeah, get celebs on board. It's hard to hold the box comfortably.
You probably need to employ someone with a set of special gloves to hold the box for you.
But the super rich like that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So there's two ways you can cut each. There's, as the French say, there's more than two ways to cut a melon. Let's carry on. Let's carry on with the podcast, please.
And they insist on saying that in English, don't they? Because it's such a cruddy phrase.
They always say it in English. It just doesn't sound very good in French. But yeah, it's like it's not boring exactly.
Yeah, and it's kind of like, you know, as you say, there's the amount of effort. There's an immense effort that's gone into it, and that's abundantly clear. Immense, but maybe too much effort.
Yeah. No, I think it's too much. It's like when you work on something too much, or like, and you just stop putting more and more icing on that cake, or stop putting more hundreds and thousands Maltesers. French fancies.
Sounds nice.
It does sound quite good, doesn't it? Mars bars, a Twix.
Yeah. And you've balanced the trifle on top of it. Covered that in brandy and lit it. Yeah.
And it's like, you know what? Again, this might just be me, but I'd just very happily just have a little...
Raspberry.
A single raspberry dressed with maybe one sprig of mint. And actually just sit back... I just lose myself in a good old-fashioned secondhand book.
So you didn't learn something about the importance of sort of natural wisdom, the old ways, communing with nature, being at one with Mother Earth.
the evil of whaling. And they've definitely, I mean, they've got their own boats, those guys, haven't they? This massive... colonial military we've already seen they've built a massive city out with tiny robots that can build a building in 6 days, whatever they say.
Yeah.
But they got to borrow a boat off a whaling company.
Come off it, mate. That's a good point.
That's a good point, yeah.
What are you on about? Well, we know you've got about 1,000 helicopters already, you know.
I think they did come up with the bullshit reason why they had to do that, with radars.
I mean, but there was a lot of that stuff going in. Do you know what I mean? There'd be a lot of someone sort of virtually turning to camera and going, I mean, they almost needed to bring the MC out again and say, and by the way, this is happening because blah, 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 blah.
Yes. The film needs an MC.
So this guy did die in the last thing. And so, he's doing a video that he's done before his death because he didn't know he was going to die. He hoped he wasn't going to die, but just in case he did die, then that's right. They've managed to put all of his memories on a USB stick. And so that's how they're able to make a blue alien version of him that they're going to send in just in case he did die, but they didn't know he was going to die. And hopefully he won't die again, but they don't know, but they're going to... But just don't worry about that too much, okay? But it's basically the same guy, but it's not the same guy, but it is the same guy, okay?
And also, there was no reason. All they had to do was find... I can't even remember why. They had to find the hero for some reason. Why was it again? They had to get him.
Well, this is the revenge story.
He's like a rebel leader, isn't he?
That's right, but there was no reason to bring back...
I assume they have other soldiers available who might have been up for it. And probably soldiers without a grudge that probably would have been able to operate more objectively.
Exactly, because grudges actually don't really work particularly, do they? They're not particularly helpful.
It didn't.
Was there any element of the film that you enjoyed, Mike?
Well, you know, I mean, it's like when you watch any film where there's pretty vistas and all that kind of thing. You know, I like a bob about in the sea. And there was a time when I thought, oh, yeah, I'd like a bob about in the sea. That looks quite fun.
So on a sort of screensaver
level. Very much so. Sort of really nice screensaver bobbing about in the sea, having a nice dip. It looks quite warm. Jump off, you know, straight off your hammock into the sea. I thought that was a great holiday destination if you could just roll out your hammock straight in the sea. I like that. I like that very much. But then, you know, you're enjoying that. And then you're also, they're trying to tell you something at the same time, which is, look, yes, these guys, they can't hold their breath underwater for a long time, but wait. All they need to do is chill out a bit and then they can suddenly now breathe underwater or hold their breath for an unlimited time. It's not clear, guys. But basically they've just chilled out a bit. So that's all you need to do. And then you're fine. Okay.
Someone sent me an excellent YouTube video where they were talking about the music in Avatar. And the reason that this person sent me the video is because what the person in the video is talking about is very similar to what we were talking about how the music is very generic. World music.
Yeah.
To the extent that it's kind of problematic how generic it is because they've just...
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so non-specific and it's terrible. But the story is that apparently James Cameron spent millions and millions of dollars employing these people called ethnomusicologists who are experts in different kinds of music from around the world and kind of different meters. So, you know, we have 7 notes in the scale in most of our music, but obviously that's not set in stone.
Yeah.
So
ha, 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 and ha. The 7 notes.
But of course there's like microtonal music and all other kinds of music. There's other kinds of rhythms.
Yeah, that's
and we can do all of this. Yeah.
Micro. I can do all of it.
There's sort of polyrhythms where, you know,
that's to express emotions like isn't it? So it's like, who was that?
Yeah, this is amazing. This is absolutely incredible. And there's obviously very different kinds of instruments that you can use.
God, it's extraordinary. Kind of listeners, you won't realise this, but he's just doing that with his voice.
I know.
And he tasked these ethnomusicologists with coming up with a brand new kind of music that had never existed before for the Na'vi. So
that doesn't at all sound like something that a sort of demented dictator would come up with or something, does it? Or someone that's really got a god complex and just gone totally stir crazy.
So yeah, basically it was like, take elements from every kind of musical tradition on Earth, but not so much of them that it'll feel too familiar. So it won't feel like the singers of the Finnish North. And it won't feel like the drummers of the South Pacific. Like it needs.
So what he's done is he said, let's take all the vibrant colours,
mush all
the
most, up,
you know,
to an amorphous mess,
and smush them all together to create the one most vibrant colour there is. No, you end up with a mushy, don't you? A mushroomy, a kind of very dark mushroom-toned kind of mud smush. That's what happens if you mix all the colours together.
Well, apparently, these people were very successful and they created this music that is unlike anything heard by a human ear before. And they'd spent sort of years creating it and coming up with it and coming up with systems. And then they apparently played it to James Cameron and said, this is what we've come up with. And then he went, no, fuck that. Can you just do like, hammer here, and then
just go. Have you seen the Cheltenham and Gloucester ad?
Have a look at this, lads. Come on. This kind of thing. That's what I meant in the first place. Yeah.
It's really great.
So yeah, he didn't like what he thought he wanted, which is because it turns out that if you put forward music the likes of which no one's ever heard before, it just sounds
like a bucket falling off some scaffolding or something like that.
Exactly. And probably isn't suitable for your blockbuster movie that's meant to appeal to, you know, billions of people worldwide. And I think that it typifies what's wrong with the whole film, is that it tries to create so much newness, but it can't. No. Because maybe it's impossible to do that. I don't know. So it ends up feeling super familiar in a weird way. Do you know what I mean? Am I sounding really pseudo?
It takes the idea of there's nothing new under the sun, and it says, well, hang on a minute. What if it's under a different sun?
What if a whale had four eyes?
There you go. New tick tattoos and was telepathic and really into the arts and made some of its own tracks in its own time.
I'm sorry, Mr. McCrinkle, but we've got planning permission and the council's allowed to knock down McCrinkles and Sons.
But why? I'm just...
Because we want to design a brand new kind of
a brand new kind of book.
With a brand new kind of book, which is a book which is a pill that you take and you lie down.
And you can hear John Grisham reading you a story from your tummy, okay?
Yeah. And it's a complete, total experience. But I'm just simple McCrinkle. Do you want a flat bookjack? A flat bookjack? No. In fact, we've invented a new kind of flapjack as well. It's 58 miles high. It's called a mega jack.
We've had 40 of the best ethno-flapjackologists studying how to create a brand new kind of flapjack.
Come together. We've made the perfect flapjack.
Goodbye.
So goodbye, Mr. McCrinkle. Boom, welcome to McCrinkle. The future. And you're not in it.
Thank you very much for listening, and thank you for supporting on Patreon.
Thank you.
Yes.
Means the world to us. It's, very generous of you. Thank you.
Big time. And, we'll see you soon.
Sure will. Keep it beanie.
I like keep it beanie. Yeah.
Okay.
Keep it beanie.
Just stumbled out.
Keep it beanie.